Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. The first package in the list today is Plasma Framework, which gets listed as a package containing Plasma libraries and runtime components, such as QML support for Plasma. And if you look at the contents of the package, the only executable in it is Plasma PKG2, I think, yeah. And we'll get into what exactly that does momentarily. There's a bunch of different licensing options listed here, which is significant because this is a development thing. So you may want to release your thing under the GPL. You might want to do it under the LGPL and so on. So the bulk of this framework does seem to be the QML support. A couple of plugins here and there, like libraries that you can hook into. But mostly, yeah, it is QML. And QML is, can we find out what QML really means? No, we cannot find out what QML really means. QML is a sort of a scripting language for Qt. And so, because KDE is based on Qt, QML is kind of a big deal. It's kind of a big part of how you might want to interface or program the Plasma desktop. Now, I will say that expectations, you know, arbitrary expectations are one thing, reality is another. When I first heard about QML, I kind of imagined, from the, especially because of the name, QML, something like, you know, HTML or XML or something like that, where it's a simple kind of declarative, I think is the correct term, programming language for GUI programming. And it is that, actually. It's pretty simple. If you go to, and I'll try to include this link in the show notes, develop.kde.org/docs/extend/plasma/widget/QML, there are, well, and actually just in that general area, you'll find lots of really, really good tutorials on how you could program your environment. And QML, as I think programming a GUI goes, is pretty darned nice. I mean, the little sample, or not, it's not a complete application, but kind of the structure of it starts with import qtquick 2.0. So you've just made an import. You've imported some important library. In C++, that would have been an include statement, and you would have had to know the path to the thing that you were going to. This is a quick import statement, just like in Python. Item, curly brace, ID colon widget, or text colon quote hello world, or color colon quote hash FFF, and so on. Close curly brace. So you've got scope, you've got clear scoping with curly braces, you've got simple declarations of objects, and yeah, it's actually pretty approachable. I don't know that I'm convinced that the toolchain is as approachable as the language still. And I'm sure that KDevelop makes it easier than it, you know, could be. But I guess what I'm saying is that there's a certain learning curve to an IDE anyway for a lot of people. It's complex, in other words. And I don't know the right answer to making it not complex. You know, programming is, as I've said before, it's still really complex. It's a big deal. I would love if it continued to get easier. And I think that little languages like QML and Lua, and I guess Python, not really though, they make it, well, yeah, Python does. I mean, objectively, it makes it more approachable. I mean, you can't argue with the results. People are using Python. It's a great place to start. I don't know if it's the best place to start in the larger scheme of things, because I think that its toolchain is actually quite complex as well. I mean, really, you tell me when I'm supposed to install my virtual environment. Should I be programming without one? And once I have one, how do I package it up? And so on. I mean, it's a complex topic. I think there's opportunity for us to improve this. But QML is another entry into that effort. And it's a good entry. And we can even try it out ourselves, because QDevelop comes with a couple of templates that you can try. Bizarrely, though, the easy template to use, at least in my experience so far, has been the QML C++ template, not the what I'll call the pure QML template, which, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this is, it's like we gain one thing at the expense of another. So there is a QML template. You can try it in KDevelop. So launch KDevelop and go to the project menu up in the top left. Select new from template and go down in the category column to Plasma. It makes sense. This is the Plasma framework that we're talking about right now. So this is the Plasma category. There's a data engine, which you'll recognize if you compare the libraries available in the Plasma framework package. There's a data engine one. There's also a plasmoid. Now the plasmoid, if you select that one, then over in the final column, you've got plasmoid, you got a little picture of some aliens and a UFO, and the drop-down menu reads Plasma QML / C++ applet. Now there are other choices there. There's Plasma QML applet with QML extension. There's Plasma QML applet. Those I found required more work than just the plain QML C++ applet. Unfortunately, in real life, that's you're kind of sacrificing a lot of the benefits from using QML in the first place. So I'm going to name this project Fake QML next. Version control, none for now. So I'll click finish. And now it wants me to put this, it wants me to create a build directory. So I'll just take the default, although I will change the build type to just a release build type. I don't want to debug right now. So we'll say okay to that. And you get a project. There may or may not be a warning in there about a deprecated applet function or class rather that is being sort of misused or at least is being used in, you know, something deprecated is being used. That's okay. You might also get a warning about the .moc file. That's a, what if it's meta object something or another. It's a cute thing. It doesn't matter that it's missing because all you have to do right now is click build, the build button in the upper left corner of KDevelop. That builds the application, and that when it while it's building, CMake knows through the auto mock macro to generate the mock file that it needs. So it's okay. MOC, not M-O-C-K, MOC. So once you've built it in your terminal, you can go to wherever you've saved your project file. I've got it in just /projects, and then go into Fake QML, do an ls, and you see that there's a build folder and a source folder. You'd think you would go into the build folder. You'd be wrong. It's the package folder. It's the source folder. And in the source folder, there is a package folder. Go into the package folder. Now you're in the place where this project's package is being constructed. And to install a QML or a Plasma package, you use, predictably possibly, Plasma PKG2, which, again, that's the sole binary included along with this Plasma framework package. So you include that, and you do, or you you invoke that, you do a Plasma PKG, you can do a --- help to kind of get an idea of what the options are, but essentially it's Plasma PKG2 --- install --. Because you're in the package location. If you weren't, you could just give the full path, but I just felt it was easier to go there. So install dot, hit return, and it's installed now. So where did it get installed to? Well, a QML, it's classified what you're building when you create a plasmoid or a widget. It's a case service. And you might remember a couple of episodes back me talking about KService and how you could build your own KServices by adding like these desktop files to your and they would appear in your context menu and so on. Well, this one specifically is a KService earmarked as a widget. And so if you go to your desktop and go to add widgets, right-click, add widgets, just right-click out on your desktop, add widgets, then the widget panel comes up on the left of your screen. And now if you search for QML, you'll find that there's a widget now called Fake QML. And you can click on that, and it'll pop up a little little widget on your desktop. It's very small, and it's that picture that you saw in KDevelop of the UFO with the aliens in it. So you've just created, I mean, you know, by clicking buttons and taking the defaults, you've just created a widget for your desktop. And it's a GUI interface, and you can have all kinds of different fields and buttons in there. And it's all documented on within the KDE, the develop.kde.org. So you can find out all the different kinds of actual widgets you can use inside of your widget. So your widgets you can use in your Plasmoid. And you can invoke them relatively easy. I mean, if you look at some QML code, you kind of get the idea. A lot of it's just really simple statements, label, you know, key value pairs, essentially. I mean, it gets more complex than that, but it's a pretty approachable language. Now, if you want to build just pure QML and not have to worry about the C++ stuff, which I would imagine would have a lot of value, then that's, I guess you could do it through KDevelop. I found it more confusing than probably just going through a text editor as described in the tutorials on develop.kde.org. But it's pretty cool. And I mean, you know, its use cases is a little limited maybe because it's a Plasmoid, but QML seems like something that for GUI development, it might be something to look into because it certainly is less of a learning curve, I think, than C++ and, you know, figuring out all the tool chain things that you need. KDevelop does quite nicely take care of a lot of the CMake stuff for you and the QMake stuff, so that's nice. But yeah, I don't know. QML probably worth investigating if you are pondering a hobby in creating GUI applications that run within the Qt framework. Next one up is Qt. No, it's not Qt. It is Plasma integration. Plasma integration. It's a set of plugins responsible for better integration of Qt applications when they're running in KDE. So let's take a look at var log packages Plasma integration. And of course, there aren't any binaries. There's an include for Plasma key data.h for a header file, a library for Plasma, Plasma IM platform put context plugin, KDE Plasma platform theme, it's important, and some configuration updates and so on. So as I understand it, and it's hard to verify this without going and looking in great detail at the source code, which I'm not going to do. As far as I understand it, from what I'm reading here, if you're running just a Qt application, and you might think, well, what's a Qt application? Like, what would that include? It could include lots of different things, actually. Some non-open source applications out there are built around the Qt framework, so especially in visual effects. That's the industry I know, I guess, the best outside of IT, so that's the one I can think of. There may be other, I'm sure there are other industries with Qt framework applications, but in visual effects, it's quite common to see Qt applications there. So that's one of them. Qtractor is another application that I quite like. It's an digital audio workstation focused, I guess, you know, arguably heavily on MIDI, or maybe I shouldn't say it that way. Maybe I should say it has really good MIDI support, but you can certainly use MIDI and audio files and so on. So that's one. And these applications, what makes them cute is that they don't use the KDE framework. So Plasma integration, quote, provides for better integration. I mean, I don't exactly know what that means without looking at the source code, but that's the idea, that if you're not hooking into the KDE framework for whatever reason, you're just creating a Qt platform application, I guess it's going to help you run it or integrate with Plasma. Okay, so there's that. And again, it's more or less a guess based on the description provided in Slackware. I have not gone to look and study the source code. So next up is Plasma-NM. This is the Plasma Network Manager. Fantastic application. It just makes managing your networks so easy. And you know, I always thought that the concept or the term network manager. I always kind of thought that was maybe a little bit grandiose. I mean, what do you need out of a network manager? You need to click on a button, select your Wi-Fi network, and sign in, right? Not a big deal. Let's just call it a Wi-Fi selector, something like that. Turns out, no, it's a network manager. Network management, a network manager for your computer can be, in some situations, really, really complex, and you may need that for whatever reason. And I can think of a couple of different reasons where you might need that. So if in in your system tray, you can click on the little network icon. Looks like a little computer with a little tiny little Ethernet logo, I think is what it's called, or not called. I think it's supposed to be like a little Ethernet cable, maybe, or a port. In fact, maybe that is an Ethernet port on its head. I don't know. Looks like a computer screen to me with a little Ethernet port, like up in the left corner. That's your network icon in the system tray. You can click on that and it'll bring up all of your networks, including any wired connection that you are connected to, potentially any wireless connections that are available, and it gives you a button here to create a hotspot if you need to share your internet connection with anyone else. You can search through all of your networks, and I know you're thinking, who would have that many networks that they would need a search box? Well, first of all, if you've ever been traveling, then you know that a lot of times you will walk into a place like a mall or an airport, and there are so many wireless signals. So it's actually quite realistic, potentially, for you to want to just quickly search and filter through network names. So there is that. But in the upper right corner of this network widget is a little setting icon, and click on that, and that brings you to that opens up the KCM, which opens up within system settings, and that's the connections panel in system settings. And this is kind of the this really is kind of the Plasma Network Manager. This is the one. This is where you go for your network management, which I've kind of talked about this in the past when we were just talking about network management or network manager. This is the Plasma version of it. So that little pop-up menu is the Plasma Network Manager. All of that is configured within system settings, and that's where you can create new networks. So for instance, if you need to add a new network connection, you can create that here. What kind of connection might you have to create? Well, it could be I mean, the Wi-Fi and the wired are generally expected to be done automatically. But what about a mobile broadband? Maybe you need to add a connection for a whatever 5G, 4G, whatever the technical term for that stuff is. For that, a mobile broadband connection, an InfiniBand, a DSL connection. I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that anymore. I mean, a lot of that, again, it might already be something that's just auto-configured on your computer, which is great, but if for whatever reason you need to add that separately, then you can. And I think even sort of bigger than that are the VPN connections, because those generally wouldn't be auto-detected because there's nothing to auto-detect yet. You have to create that. You have to generate that. So there's OpenVPN, point-to-point tunnel protocol. There's secure socket tunneling protocol. There's SSH. There's WireGuard. And then there's an import VPN connections. And that's the great thing about a VPN connection is that there's, the configuration file generally is just plain text. It has some specifiers about what server you're connecting to and what your key, your auth token is, and so on. And you can just import that, and it becomes a connection that you can use within Network Manager. Really, really nice. And then you can drill down too into them. And for instance, maybe you have a VPN where it only works over IPv4, so you could make it dependent upon an IPv4 connection. Or maybe you have a VPN connection that is only for a subset of IP addresses. I mean, sometimes your VPN is a VPN where you want to direct all of your network traffic through this VPN, through the VPN server. But sometimes that's not the case, especially for work VPN. Quite possibly, you're just essentially opening up a gateway into your work network, your virtual private network. You're opening up that, you're giving yourself access to that network and everything on that network, but you still want access to everything on your own network because it's your personal connection maybe that is providing the internet or your local home network and so on. So you can connect, you can configure rather that from within this control panel. You can define whether all users are permitted to connect to this network or not. You can set a specific firewall zone for a specific network and so on. So VPN is, I think, one major use case. Mobile broadband connection, possibly. I've never really had one in my computer, so I don't know if that's auto-detected generally or not. And then the other one is changing locations. So if you've got you take your laptop to work, you take your laptop to home. If you want to have distinct sort of networking profiles, that's possible with Network Manager. So turns out that Network Manager is not a grandiose name for this application. It really can be a full-on network manager. It may not be for you. It might literally just be a Wi-Fi chooser, which is fine. But in some situations, you do need a lot more. Network Manager provides that. Next up is Plasma PA, which is a Plasma applet for audio volume management using Pulse Audio. Now, this is almost old news at this point. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a new audio framework in town. Because it's just how things are. And it is called Pipewire. And it is quite exciting. People seem to really be enjoying it. I was trying it out myself for a while and didn't make a whole lot of headway, which is fine. I didn't give it much of a chance, so I'll have to look at that again. But Plasma PA is the one that I've kind of gotten used to, and so it's kind of the thing that I'm defaulting to right now. But I do intend to do more with Pipewire because it is supposed to be really, really nice. So Pulse PA, it is the what is it, Pavu Cuddle of GNOME, I think, is there. There's a I mean it Pavu Cuddle also occurs, you can use that anywhere, but if you want a KDE Plasma Desktop specific volume control center, then Pulse-PA is the thing that you're likely to run into. And you can get there a couple of different ways. I made it a shortcut on my panel because I just use it all the time. I'm always switching between this microphone that I'm speaking to you on right now, which is it's a Zoom H4 microphone mounted on a microphone stand or an arm, I guess. And I had intended to kind of use that for a lot of different things, but it kind of kept getting in my way just physically. So I also have my gaming sort of style headset with a little microphone on it. So sometimes I'm switching to that for other things, for like work calls and stuff like that. And then I've got this microphone. And then sometimes I want output to one set of headsets or to, I'm all the time switching inputs and outputs. So I've got that as a pinned item on my panel. So when I click that once again, it takes me to system settings. Why? Because there's a KCM called KCM, I don't know, Pulse PA or something. I mean, it's in this package, KCM underscore Pulse Audio. That's the name of the plugin. So it's a user lib64 Qt5 plugins, KCMs/KCMs underscore Pulse Audio. There's some QML here. That could be interesting to look at, to be honest. Kind of looking at the QML that builds, that would be very interesting to look at the source code for. The rest of it's pretty much just documentation. So really the thing that you're going to be interacting with is the KCM, the KDE configuration module. Yeah, module, because it's a KCM module and it's redundant. Yeah. So KCM. This has a couple of different sections, which I'll be honest, it's a little bit clunky. I feel like what it really wants to have is a panel, sort of a table of contents panel. I think the danger there would be then you've got a bunch of different subcolumns going to different subcolumns, but I don't know. I think I would like that. So it's audio, and then there's playback devices, and each playback destination, or in theory, each playback destination is listed here. Now, I say in theory because there's no monitor device here, and I don't mean computer monitor like a display. I mean, there is a thing in Pulse Audio where you can tie into a monitor channel that it's sort of almost a recursive or meta thing. It's like the monitor of this device. So if you have a playback device sending sound to speaker CH321 and you want to pipe that to the input of something else, then you could pipe the monitor of speakers CH321 into the input of something else. Or you could use that monitor as the input for something else. And I used to do that a lot for background music on calls and things like that. If I wanted to have sounds or something in a call, I could use that kind of as a soundboard almost. I think it's in Pavu Cuddle that you can still you can do that. But for whatever reason within this KCM, I've not yet seen a monitor device existing. So anyway, playback devices, and then there's like, you know, speaker CH321 line out and simultaneous output to both of those places, which really, why don't I just leave it on there? I forget, I do feel like there might be a reason. And then there's recording devices, lots of different microphones, because there's the microphone that I'm speaking into right now. There's the embedded microphones in the not one but two webcams that I have mounted on my display. It's a long story. And then there's an inactive card, which is the HDMI controller thing that's just naturally in the video card that I have, and then various playback streams representing everything on my system that is producing or potentially producing audio. And you have manual adjustment for each of those different things, or you can send them to different places. So you could have some music going to your external speakers, but something else going to your video call or whatever. And then recording streams, and that of course represents anything currently ingesting audio. So right now, literally, there's an Audacity thing getting sound through an ALSA plugin, which is, you know, eventually resolves back to whatever is set here in the audio pulse plasma PA. So it's a big overview of all the sound on your system. It's really, really handy. It's a really great little application, to be honest. The only complaint I have about it, I guess, is that I have not been able to find the monitor devices for things the way that I can find them in the normal Pavu Cuddle application, which I don't tend to use Pavu Cuddle because I just, first of all, I hate the name. It's a stupid name. And second of all, it's a GNOME kind of application. It just doesn't quite, like, you know, fit into the rest of my sort of workflow exactly. I mean, that's silly. It doesn't matter, really. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I'm pretty darn familiar with it, so I feel pretty good about that as my interface. And I think it's time for some coffee. Okay, and we're back. Oh, you're already here, actually. That's embarrassing. I was trying to be very quick, but you beat me back. Plasma SDK. This is these are applications useful for Plasma desktop development. It includes Cuttlefish, Cuttle Fish, Look and Feel Explorer, Plasma Engine Explorer, Plasma Theme Explorer, and Plasmoid Viewer. Let's kind of start in reverse here and talk about this Plasmoid Viewer. This one is an interesting little application because at the beginning of this very episode, we just created a Plasmoid, a little widget or an applet. Plasmoid, widget, and applet. Those are all, I think, valid expressions of these little embedded integrated applications. It kind of seems problematic to me. Anyway, you just created a Plasmoid. So yeah, this is a Plasmoid Viewer, so you can view something without sort of cluttering up your desktop, I guess, would be the use case. I don't really know what the use case for this is, because to me, I would just, I guess I would, because you have to have it installed anyway. So only plasmoids that are installed on the system that you are running Plasmoid Viewer on are detected by Plasmoid Viewer. Initially, I figured, oh, well, this is going to be something where I don't have to install the plasmoid. Nope, it says very explicitly only packages, only applets that are installed are detected. You can use kbuild Cycoka 5 or whatever it is to sort of refresh the cache, and that's that. So it has to be installed, but the I guess the unique feature here. And maybe, I guess this could be the use case itself. The unique feature is that you can control how the plasmoid is viewed quickly and easily within this viewer. So the command is plasmoid viewer, and then you need to do dash dash applet. That's applet. And then the name of the applet. And that's a little bit tough because you might think, well, the name is, what did we do? Fake QML. No, that's not the name of your applet. That was the name of the project that we created and used, but that's not the name of the actual plasmoid itself. The name is whatever's listed in the .desktop file for that plasmoid. And in this case, possibly because we didn't set it anywhere else, or I'm not really sure, I didn't look into it, org.kde.plasma.fake. QML. That's the name of the applet, as unwieldy and not very catchy as that is. So hit return, and you get a new window with whatever theme you have selected for your plasmoid viewer, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And you can do all kinds of things like change the form factor. There's a button bar at the bottom of this plasmoid viewer. Presumably, you're supposed to be able to change sort of the form factor and display type of the plasmoid, although I have not been able to get that to work, even with something like I don't know, org.kde.plasma.bluetooth, which is the built-in Bluetooth module for this, or the built-in Bluetooth plasmoid, I guess. I'll go to like form factors, change it to application, refresh, nothing's changed. Location, full screen, refresh, nothing's changed. So I'm not really sure. I mean, heck, I can even click screenshot and I get an error in the console saying that it's not authorized, that the screenshot has failed, the reply is invalid with error, the process is not authorized to take a screenshot. So I don't know if I've got something configured poorly or what, but it doesn't seem to be working for me all that well. But it still does show the plasmoid that I wanted to see in kind of a self-contained environment. And then there are other things like dash x or dash dash x position with a P, with a capital P, set the x position of the plasmoid viewer on the Plasma desktop. You could do the size of the window. You can also do the theme. So if we do the Bluetooth applet with a theme of, let's just do Breeze, I guess. No, that's must be what I'm using right now. I thought it was on Breeze Dark. Let's try Oxygen. That should work. Yeah, there we go. Now you're seeing your plasmoid in a different theme than what your desktop is set to. So that's got to be handy, right? You want to see what your plasmoid looks like in a different theme. You don't have to change your old desktop theme. You just launch Plasmoid Viewer with dash dash theme, some other theme defined, again, that you have installed, and you're good to go. Confusing thing, I think, with all of this stuff, and this is, I mean, this is a lot of stuff, are these new sort of, I don't know how new it is, but I mean, for I think a lot of users, this new concept of sort of a canonical name versus a name. So the canonical name being something like org.kde.plasma.something, and then the casual name is something different. And I really, that's painful. And I'm thinking that it's extra painful here because you've got two different options, dash dash applet that requires this full fancy canonical name thing. And then you got dash dash theme, and it's just like, oh, give me the casual name. Well, what is the casual name really? What if we do like Breeze Dark? In quotes. Does that change anything? No, that's the same as Breeze. Did I get an error about that? Don't think so. So I'm not sure if I'm just, maybe I don't know what theme I'm using. I don't know. Oxygen what is it, air, I think, is the light version. Okay, so if it's invalid, it just defaults to your own, to your current theme. That's what I'm seeing. Okay, well, anyway, that's Plasmoid Viewer. That's a thing that comes with the Plasma SDK package. Next up, I mean, within this package is the Plasma Theme Explorer, Plasma Engine Explorer, and Look and Feel Explorer. So let's do Plasma Theme Explorer. So enter that into a terminal, or I guess you can you launch it from like Theme X? Yeah, Plasma Theme Explorer. So you can do it from the KDE menu as well. But anyway, it's called Plasma Theme Explorer. It's a little application that shows you what a theme looks like in general. So that's boring. It's the current theme. So there is one called Air. Okay, I knew it was called Air, but I thought it was Oxygen Air. So Air, it's a rather light theme, and you just get to see things like this is what the buttons look like in the corner. Here's what the analog clock widget looks like. Here's a sample icon, and so on. So it's really just it is fairly I want to say raw. Yeah, it's raw, meaning that it doesn't it's it is very much, you can tell, sort of like it's parsing user include, or rather user share. It's parsing user share something and giving you kind of just a dump of everything that it finds there, which is fine. I think this is it, but it does feel a little bit on the, you know, purely functional side. Like when you get to the media control box, for instance, it's just all the media control icons crammed into a little 60, not 64 by 64, maybe a 512 by 512 square. It's informative. It tells you what they look like. It's just not, you know, it isn't necessarily like the most sort of beautiful thing, which again, not a problem. I'm just saying this is a functional feeling application. Useful, functional. So and then Look and Feel Explorer is same kind of deal. It shows you the Plasma Global Theme Explorer. You can choose the theme that you want to view, and it shows you sort of all of the different sort of names and metadata for the different themes. So that includes the screenshot, thumbnail screenshot, then the again casual name like Breeze Twilight. That's what I was looking for. I thought it was Breeze Dark, Breeze Twilight, and the comment is Breeze Twilight for the KDE VDG, author KDE Virtual Design Group, email the email version 2.0. So it kind of gives you a rundown of what's installed on your system, which is useful, I guess. Yeah, seems useful. And that's Look and Feel. And then what's the other one? The Plasma Engine, I think it was. Engine Explorer, yeah. And this is the Plasma Data Engine Explorer. So you've got a couple of different things. You've got things like org.kde.activities, and you can look into here and see what kind of data is stored within the activities data engine. There's apps, there's applications, application jobs rather. There's comic. I guess it's the one of the widgets to view web comics, and I guess it's got a database somewhere. Solid Device Engine. Doesn't look like there's really anything there, interestingly. Don't know how to get that. Device Notifications. Dictionary. So a couple of different places where, you know, there's data being stored. Might be interesting, might not. It may at least show you the structure of some of the data engines within your within the KDE sort of, or within your computer really, because this does look at a lot of things. I mean, it shows you, you know, it'll show you what it can, basically. It doesn't have to be a KDE or a Plasma sort of thing. I mean, it's data about everything that's installed on your computer. I don't know how useful it is for like everyday users, but I think it could be interesting if you are trying to sort of get an idea of the structure of applications, and also what kind of data and inputs and so on does get stored about different applications. So that's the Plasma Data or Plasma Engine Explorer. I don't have a use case for it, But there it is. It exists. And that's the Plasma SDK package. Next up is System Monitor. This is a great one. I mean, it's one of those things that I feel is, I feel like once you start using Linux, you start to learn the different, manual ways of getting all of this information. And I think it's possible, this could just be me, but it's possible to forget about this sort of thing because you just know all of the commands to get this data through other more generic means. But I mean, if you think about how often you went to a task manager of some sort in your old OS. Oh, this is that, or this is partly that. I mean, I think there is actually a dedicated task manager. Yeah, there is a dedicated task manager that you could look at, but Plasma System Monitor is another way of getting there. So if you just type in System Space Monitor, you can launch that. It's a little application. Again, I think it probably, no, it is just an application. Okay. And it's got all kinds, it's like a dashboard for your computer. This is the kind of stuff probably that honestly I should just put all of this stuff on my desktop. I'll bet you there's a widget, a plasmoid for each one of these things. And I should just have that scattered all over my desktop. But it gives you lots of cool information, like how much memory are you using? How much disk space are you using? What's your CPU load? I do have that plasmoid on my desktop. What networks are you connected to? What network rates are you getting right now? Like literally right now. So it's funny because it only shows like 480 bits per second. You know, it's like, well, that's not actually my network speed. That's just the traffic that's being distributed right now or being used right now. What's my system look like? The host name, the operating system name and version, and all these other things. Those are bizarrely not even filled in. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. I'll have to look at that sometime. That's not very useful in its current state. Feels like it should be, though, because it's got a slot for Qt version, Plasma version, framework version. And then you've got a thing for applications, and that's sort of... Oh, no, it's not. Okay, applications... Oh, application view is unsupported on my system. I don't know what that's supposed to do. History, yeah, sure, cool. That's like a graph view of all of those processes that I just talked about. But the other one that I wanted to talk about was processes, which essentially is a PS sort of view or a top view of everything happening on your system right now. It's graphical, GUI, so you can click on column names for, you know, to get different views. Let's view it by the thing that is consuming the most memory. Oh, look, surprise, surprise, it's my web browser. Let's look at the thing that's using the least memory. Well, there's a lot there. But yeah, so it's a bunch of processes listed. You can right-click on it, send signals to it, sighup, sigint, sigterm, sigkill, or just click end process, and you can just end the process. So it is very much, I would say, a task manager in that sense. So that is Plasma System Monitor. Next one, Plasma Vault. Plasma applet and services for creating encrypted vaults. Plasma Vault offers strong encryption features presented in a user-friendly way. Lock and encrypt documents and hide them when the user is logged in. These vaults can be decrypted and opened easily. So these are Plasma Vaults. And if we look at most Plasma-Vault, there's a little bit of documentation. There's a Plasma Vault file item action library, and there's a couple of things within user share Plasma plasmoids, and there you see the canonical name of it, org.kde.plasma.vault. So that kind of tells us, I think, more or less that this, I mean, it says it in the description as well, but just looking through, you know, training yourself to catch these things early, this is a plasmoid. This isn't something that you're necessarily going to launch from the KDE menu. You're going to add this as a widget or something to your desktop. So I'm going to right-click on my desktop, select add widget, because why would it be add plasmoid? So you add a widget, and then you you can search for vault, find vault, and there it is. You add it to your desktop and close that. window, there you go. You close that widget, you add that widget to your desktop, and it's pretty empty. It's it says no vaults have been set up, so click create new vault, and then you get a sort of a little setup wizard where you can call where you can create an encrypted vault for yourself. So what should we call this? Important. How about just data? Let's just call it data. Data. Backend cryfs. Let's change that. So there's cryfs, inkfs, and go cryfs. Right, I guess we'll just do cryfs then. Next, security mode. It's encrypted, safely storing it. You can put it. This is a good point. You can put it on various clouds that you might want to use for like free cloud storage. You know, there's all the usuals listed here. All the ones that I wouldn't commit data to, certainly without encrypting it. So that's kind of a nice little reminder. And then there's a password creator. So I guess I'll create a password. Password. No, let's just do bogus 123. Bogus 123. Okay. Not a great password, but I don't intend to share. I don't intend to keep this around. Now, this is nice though. So you can encrypt the data location. And you can put this wherever you want. So I'm just going to put it in my home directory. Am I? Maybe I'm not. It doesn't seem to like me changing that, so maybe I won't do that. Maybe I'll just keep it where it wants to put it, and that's homeclat2.local share plasma-vault/data with a capital D, because that's what I named my little vault, .enc for encrypted. The mount point is going to be homeclat2vaults data. Choose the cipher. I'll just let it do the default. Limit it to selected activities. That's kind of cool. That's nice. So you could have this not even be available on certain activities. That's very cool. Go offline while this vault is open. Switch off networking and Bluetooth. Wow, that is some serious stuff. And then you click create. You wait for it to generate the vault. It does take a while. I would say it even takes a little bit longer than you think it ought to. So it's just be patient. But once it's finished, then the vault has been created, and then it shows up with a little green sort of plug-in icon displaying, showing you that yes, this thing has been created and has been mounted. So it is now an active vault. It shows up in your, in like Dolphin, for instance, in at least for me, because I don't have a side panel, but it shows up under the submenu of devices. So it sees it as a, almost as an external device. And then it opens up just like an empty folder, and you could put stuff into it, store stuff there. And when you're done, click the lock vault button, and the icon switches to a little lock icon, and then you know that the vault exists. It's just locked. So if we want to now unlock and open this thing, I'll click unlock and open. It prompts me for the password, bogus 123, and you wait a little bit for it to do all the little the decryption that it needs to do, which again takes a little bit longer than I feel like it ought to. It's almost a disconcerting delay, but it does work, and it opens up Dolphin for you to that location. Would I use this? I don't know. Honestly, I don't feel like I probably would. I don't feel like I'm familiar enough with that encryption scheme, cryfs, to feel like I could access this vault should this plasmoid sort of go away. I mean, I'm sure I could look it up. Probably look it up right now. Let's do mount cryfs volume Linux. See what luck I get there. How to mount and unmount a storage device. No, that's not useful. Okay, so no immediately obvious results for that specifically. So yeah, I'd have to do a little bit of, I guess, research really to figure out how I could access this from outside of Plasma. And I would be a little bit nervous until I'd proven to myself that that was possible. I'm going to remove the vaults. And then before I forget, I'm going to go to share plasma dash vault. Yeah, data inc. Oh, there's some data in there. So I wonder if that's one of the I don't know. Yeah, I would want to do some research on what exactly the methodology would be. Right now, for any encrypted files like financial data, things like that, I just use GNU PG, GPG, and a little script that I have called what do I call it? Credit, CREDIT, because I only encrypt. Really functionally, I generally only encrypt text files. Like that's, I don't really need anything else encrypted. Like what would you need? What other thing would you need encrypted? I guess maybe financial records or something like that, or your will. I don't know. What do you need to encrypt your will? I don't know. Whatever you might want to encrypt. I do text files. And so when I want to then edit the text file, I simply launch credit, which opens that encrypted file into a RAM disk or yeah, a RAM disk. And I edit it there in the RAM disk and then save it back to the actual file and re-encrypt, and I'm done. It's all very simple, very quick, and it works for me. And it's OS independent. Like as long as I have GNU GP, GNU PG, GPG, then I'm good to go. I can work on that file no matter what. So that's kind of my comfort zone for encrypted stuff and backup stuff, kind of like divorced as much as possible from platform-specific tools is a good thing. All right, that was Vault. We only have two more now. Well, three, but let's call it two. Plasma Wayland protocols. Guess what that's going to be? Yep, it's Wayland protocols to ensure that the Plasma desktop works as expected under Wayland. It says specifically this project contains XML files of non-standard Wayland protocols used by Plasma. So this is the special stuff that Plasma wants to do that Wayland hasn't either integrated or has flat out rejected. I don't know. But that's what that is. So I'm not going to look at those. Those are XML files that help with Wayland. I am not, for the record, running Wayland on this on Slackware right now. I'm just doing whatever it does by default, which, xorg, and it's fine. It works fine. I may eventually switch over to Wayland, maybe, possibly, not sure, but I'm pretty happy with whatever I've got right now. I mean, and that's not a philosophical statement. I've never, Zorg is fine. I love a lot of its flexibility, but I also recognize that it's got its problems as well. So Wayland seems like a nice sort of eventual target to get to, but I don't feel an urgent need to get there either. And there are only two more to go for within Plasma anyway. I mean, there's more after that within the KDE package set, but with the ones starting with Plasma, there are but two to go. Plasma Workspace and Plasma Workspace Wallpapers. One of those isn't that big of a deal, but the other one has a bunch of executables in there that are going to be really great to talk about because they're some of my favorite applications, or rather functions, of the Plasma desktop. So when you think of the Plasma desktop, I guess technically you're actually probably thinking of Plasma Workspace because there's a bunch of stuff in here. I'm not going to cover it in this episode. There's just too much to go over. It'll happen in the next episode. Be here for that. They're great. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.